Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Ha, knock, knock.
No soliciting.
Oh. Okay.
Good morning, Swirl, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Thursday, July 22nd. I'm J.E. Skeets, and we're still hashtag full squad. We got the homie, Tass Mellis.
What's up, everybody?
What's up, Tassie? Got my top shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o!
Hey-o! The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friend.
Wheelie. Finally, making the magic happen is J.D.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team for joining us live right now on YouTube. Smash that like button. Leave a comment below the video to help us defeat the algorithm. And if you haven't already subscribed to No Dunks on YouTube, keep sending in your questions and comments, please, for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. You know we'll be stepping on the beach next week. So you got some days here to get your NBA and your non-NBA questions in to nodunks@theathletic.com. And finally, go grab your No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com. Lots of shirts and hoodies and shorts and coffee mugs. Sincere thanks to everybody who went and grabbed a special limited edition Finals Wedgie t-shirt to celebrate our record-breaking season where we hit 58 wedgies. Did some big numbers. Everybody wanted to get their hands on one of those. You only had 24 hours to do so over at nodunks.com. So thanks to everybody that grabbed one. And suckers, if you didn't get one, you'll never see it again. That's a good shirt.
Never again.
Yeah, can't sleep on these. Okay, so I saw some people in the stream team before we went live going, what are these guys going to talk about? There's no basketball anymore. Bucks won the championship. Giannis is in Chick-fil-A drive-thrus ordering 50 pieces. Amazing clip. Well, we came up with something fun here. And I think people in the stream team, people listening and watching later, everybody will have an answer for these questions. It's sort of a playoffs recap. We're looking back at... well, maybe all of the series, we'll see. But the entire postseason, I got some fun questions for you guys, and we'll go right to the first one. Tass, you can get us started. This one might be a bit of a no-brainer, but let's throw it out there anyway. 2021 NBA playoffs, who is the postseason MVP? We know Giannis won finals MVP, but did he also take the postseason MVP, Tass?
Oh, you know who it is. Yeah. It's obvious. And if you're asking what are they going to talk about, you're obviously not a fan of No Dunks and the Starters. You should know what that is as well. Every year we recap the playoffs as soon as they're done. We need to fill some shows here, and sometimes it's hard to remember everything that happened over the last 2 months. Mm-hmm. It does blur together. It is a long period of time. I mean, it's like a quarter of the season. So, yeah, let's recap it a bit. But going back, Giannis Antetokounmpo, easily the MVP. But, I mean, he was doing it, you know, for three rounds. Because the first round, he was actually subpar. He was not Giannis Antetokounmpo. He was shooting in the low 40s. What? That's not him. But overall, his numbers incredible when all is said and done. 30, 13, and 5, plus a block per game, shooting at 57% after a bad first round. So that tells you how great he was the last three rounds. Yeah. And then taking it up even a higher level in the finals. The numbers are ridiculous. Obviously, that exclamation point at the end with the 50 to give the Bucks their first championship in 50 years. Elevated these numbers of 35, 13, and 5 again. 1.2 steals, 1.8 blocks, 62 friggin' percent from the floor. That is absolutely ridiculous. He was unstoppable. He was smashing it on the inside. He started taking those mid-rangers in game number six there. He obviously has very, very memorable plays that we'll get to on both ends. And I think, yeah, speaking of sort of the defensive side, he was such a key part. You know, the Bucks did win ugly, which happens in postseasons, because he was such a huge part of the defense. I mean, That's part of Giannis's calling card. And as much as we just want to talk about offense, I mean, look back at the last five or six best players on the championship teams. It was like LeBron and AD doing it sometimes defensively, Kawhi the year before that, Durant, you know, not so much as Giannis, LeBron and Curry. I mean, Giannis stands out on the defensive end. He is such a huge part of the Bucks defense, and then to be able to carry a team offensively is really special. So yeah, with a bullet, Giannis Antetokounmpo MVP, and then, you know, you guys can take it from there, because there were some good performances from other guys, but it's hard to forget when you just watch a guy finish off a final series with 50 freaking points.
I was gonna say, I got a little trivia for you here, guys. I don't know if you have it up in front of you, hopefully you don't, but we had 10 guys, if we round up on one of them, we had 10 guys average 30 points per game in the playoffs. Now, some of the guys only played like 5 games or 6, but can you name them all? Lili, why don't you get us started? We know Giannis is one of them, okay? He's 30.2 over the entire playoffs. Luka, number one. That's right. TK, mm-hmm. We'll go to you next. Go around the horn here.
Kevin Durant.
Yeah, he's second there. All right. Back to you, Tess.
Booker,
no. No, yeah, no. Sure. He was a shade under 30. He was 27.3 for the playoffs.
Trey Young, I guess. Gotcha.
Trey Young. No, 28.8. No. Yeah, that's crazy. You're forgetting. I don't remember. There's some obvious ones you guys haven't thrown out yet. But
the Donk.
Well, we got the Donk. He already said that.
Lillard.
Lillard, correct.
Beal.
Correct. Only 5 games, but he got there.
Yeah. Yeah,
John Morant.
John Morant
over 30.
Yeah, only 5 games.
Been a while.
He got there. You're missing,
Mitchell.
I believe, three
Donovan
more guys.
Mitchell, probably. Donovan Mitchell.
Correct. He played 10 games and averaged 32.3.
Wow. Crazy. Paul George.
Nope, not Paul George. But you're close.
Kawhi.
Kawhi. Yeah, right, Kawhi averaged 30.4, and you got two more. A guy that only played in 5 games in the first round in the East, and then a guy that was he played in 10 games. He was awesome, of course, and he was
Tatum.
Tatum is the guy in the East, correct? And one more guy. Sort of surprising that this is the one I'm rounding up.
Yeah, Jokic.
That's correct.
There you go.
29.8.
Great.
Good stuff. But, you know, I brought that up, or that little trivia there, because, you know, yes, Giannis is the postseason MVP, but holy crap, we had some performances there, Lili. Like, can you make a case for anybody else besides Giannis if you want to? I mean, or who would be, like, who would be 2-3 to you on this, like, this type of ballot?
Yeah, I mean, Giannis, there's no way anyone had a better playoff series. But I'll say, I'm going to give so much love to Trae Young here, because in his very first trip to the playoffs, he leaves averaging 29 points a game, shooting 31% from downtown, 42% in total, also averaged 9.5 assists a game, only 4 turnovers, got to the free throw line a lot, shot 86% there, and really did carry his team a lot. I think I saw the numbers before. He had 7 games of 30 or more, including that 48-point impressive victory in game one against the Milwaukee Bucks, where he was just incredible there. He shot 17 of 34, and that was when we were kind of like, I certainly was like thinking, like, I mean, they got past the Knicks and it was like, oh, okay, nice. Well, what that sort of series could have gone either way, and the Hawks were the better team. They came back against the Sixers and it was like, oh, okay, this is something impressive, but they'll probably not be able to do that against Milwaukee. And then in game one, it was like, oh my God, are we going to see the Atlanta Hawks in the NBA Finals? They'd never led a conference finals before. So he was super impressive, but of course he did pick up that injury, you know, midway through that series, and that certainly affected him. But I just continued to be impressed with how well he played on the road. You know, game one of his NBA playoff career, he was being sworn at by the Knicks crowd. I mean, that must have been a pretty tough environment for him. And he goes in and hits the floater. He's shushing the crowd. He's getting spat on by the Knicks fans. And then he came back and closed out the series. His first ever attempt to close out a series on the road in New York City, and he was able to do that. So, you know, the where the season was when Nate McMillan took over from Lloyd Pierce at 14-20, honestly, it looked like the Hawks' best hope would be to just make the play-in tournament and see if something could maybe happen there and they could get into the playoffs. Instead, they leave having made the conference finals. Now, look, you know, you can always sort of pick things and say maybe they just got lucky with this matchup. You know, Ben Simmons dunks the ball. Maybe the Hawks don't even get out of that Eastern Conference semifinals there. But Trae Young still, to me, showed that he is ready already to perform on the big stage. And he delivered. He hit those big shots. He was awesome. He kept his team involved. He won games for his team. And I made the reference that he had an Allen Iverson sort of ability to just sort of take over games there. And that was what impressed me the most because, you know, remember last season, as long as ago as it was, he got into it with Lloyd Pierce and Travis Schlenk basically saying, like, we're not good enough. I need some help. And here we are, you know, a season later, and the team made the conference finals, and you have to really feel good about the direction of the Hawks, where they're going now. So Trae Young would get, you know, if you were only going to the conference finals, I think Trae Young probably finishes, you know, silver or bronze medal perhaps in the MVP racing, using the Olympic reference here.
Sure.
But he was fantastic, and the Hawks were incredible. And so I think he deserves a lot of love for what he gave us in the postseason.
Well, TK, you wrap up this this first question here. Give me your ballot. 1, 2, 3, if this was a real thing for postseason MVP. Is Trae Young on it, or do the two Suns guys in Booker and CP3 bump him down? Is Kevin Durant have to be in the mix? Like, what do you think?
Well, you hit on the guy that I'm most interested in talking about, Skeets. I think you got to give a little bit of a bone throw on the ballot to Chris Middleton. He hit a game winner in the first round of the playoffs. He put the Hawks out of the playoffs when Giannis was out. He was obviously huge in game 5 in the NBA Finals. You know, people were trying to make a case for Middleton as Finals MVP, so put him on my ballot. Yeah. You can choose between Chris Paul and Devin Booker. They both had their moments being the star for the Suns. Chris Paul obviously went out for a little. Devin Booker had like a massive triple-double. That was huge. Chris Paul was a monster in game 6 of the conference finals. 31 in the second half, 41 for the game to go to his first finals. That's MVP ballot worthy. But the only guy who didn't make the finals that I would be considering is Kevin Durant. Incredible in the postseason this year. Third in the playoffs and scoring at 34 per game, 9 rebounds per game, 4 assists. He shot 51, 40, 87 from the field, 3 in the line. He played one of the great games ever, 49 points, 17 rebounds, 10 assists, 48 minutes in a Game 5 win, rocking the Basquiat jerseys. And I will never forget the Brooklyn Nets playing Sandstorm in the final minute of that game. One of the biggest games we've ever seen. In 2021, are you kidding me? KD, though, almost pulled off again in Game 7, 48, 9, and 6, 53 minutes, but his big-ass shoe stepped on the three-point line. It was, like, this close to the Bucks being out of the playoffs and the Nets advancing to play against the Hawks. Who knows what happens then? So, yeah, Kevin Durant, he, to me, was maybe he's got to be somewhere on the ballot. Maybe he's number 5, but he's got to be somewhere. The finals participants that didn't make it, he was most impressive to me.
Well, that leads us into our next question here sort of nicely, because maybe this is the most iconic play, that shoe on the line there from KD. That's the cue. From this entire postseason, what to you was the most iconic play? It feels like we've got a lot to pick from, actually, with what was going down, of course, in the finals. But where do you go, TK?
Well, this one seems like it's an easy choice as well. Giannis's game 4 alley-oop block is going to go down as the iconic play from this title run, I think. You know, he defended the alley, he defended the oop, had people ranking it on the all-time finals block list before they even showed the replay. I think we're still waiting to hear it. Isn't that right, Tassie?
Yes, we are. Where is
it? Get that thing up. Rack it up, bud. Anyways, I think people went a little overboard with the nobody else could pull this off thing. The Bulls' Patrick Williams pulled it off against the Suns this season against Booker and Ayton. Wow. Literally, he didn't do it in the NBA Finals, obviously, but it's a play that others can pull off. And that's why, to me, the Game 5 alley-oop from Jrue Holiday is actually my most iconic play. It had the steal from Jrue on Devin Booker. Mm-hmm. It had the effort and the dunk from Giannis. It had the foul from Chris Paul. It involved most of the major players in the NBA Finals, put the Bucks up 3 with 13 seconds left. And if you want to extend things, Giannis missed the ensuing free throw. Missing free throws, a big part of the playoffs for Giannis coming up until Game 6, basically. But the Bucks get the rebound back, and Chris Middleton seals it at the line. That's all the big names from this series involved on 1.5 plays, if you will. So, yeah, it's really going to come down to the block and the alley-oop, Game 4 and Game 5. I'm going for the dunk, but I think people are choosing the block.
Plus, it had that big flex afterwards. The iconic, hey, Giannis posing. Well, yeah, you didn't see a replay for the block. I mean, until late that night. So yeah, it's the dunk is just, you know, it's a dunk. Offense over defense.
Well, I mean,
people are mentioning LeBron is also sitting front row. The picture is pretty amazing, yeah. Right? Where it's like Giannis dunking Chris Paul down there and LeBron just sitting there watching from the back like, damn, man.
Yeah. Isn't Adele exactly. also in one of the photos too?
Like, yeah, maybe so.
With her mouth open in shock. Closer game too, the game five rip and then dunk. I mean, the Bucks were up, I guess, in both instances, but less time, right, in the game five one where – it's like we're down to like 20 seconds left in the game. And it's like, okay, Booker might win this. He's going to ISO. And then, of course, the play happens. Where the other one, they were up a little bit in game four.
They're up two, I think.
Yeah, it was a two. Two.
It was a minute 10 left in the finals game.
It was going to tie the game for sure.
It was a minute 10 left.
Yeah, minute 10. So I'm just saying there's more time. I lean towards what Trey's saying. I actually think the steal and the alley-oop is more iconic between the two. But, I mean, you really can't go wrong. I mean, we also had Ayton with a game-winning alley-oop in these exact same playoffs. But where do you go then, Tass? Which one do you pick from the finals, or do you have another one that we're forgetting?
Yeah, part of the definition of icon, as you guys are saying, is an icon, is putting it on the wall. I mean, what are you putting on the wall as a photo from that Game 4 block? I mean, there people are they put it up afterwards, but it just doesn't compare to the jam dunk with Chris Paul pushing him and him posing afterward. The two just don't compare. Like, to me, it starts to remind me of Wade tossing it up to LeBron and then throwing up the arms way out wide as he goes out of bounds. I mean, it's that imagery is just, it's too strong to deny. I think the game four is actually more important. They're down 2-1, easily, could have gone the other way. I mean, in game five, it's a 2-2 game, mm-hmm. at least so I think that one's more important, but no doubt, I think the alley-oop will be the one that, burns an image into people's heads. And again, we didn't see the freaking replay, so that's part of it. But as a photo, as what Giannis would probably put on as well, what somebody is going to get made for him, there's going to be some oil painting of the dunk rather than the alley-oop. The block.
Yeah. Beautiful. Lee, are we forgetting any iconic plays from the postseason?
Well, can an iconic play be a play that actually didn't happen? Because Ben Simmons, I mean, his game seven non-dunk is huge because of how it's reverberated since then. I mean, you had an extremely rare circumstance where his star teammate and player and coach basically called him out after the game and said, that was when we lost the game and the series right there. That was game seven at home. Ben Simmons had been, struggling at the free throw line in this entire series. He'd been struggling in the fourth quarter. He had a chance to give his team the lead. I believe they were down one at the time, and he passed out. Who did he pass it to now? I can't
Harris,
remember.
Harris, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, who got fouled and missed one of those free throws.
Yeah.
And since then, I mean, that almost ended Ben Simmons' Philadelphia 76ers career. It may have, in fact. We're still waiting to see exactly what will happen here. But I think that is so iconic because everyone watching that game, whether you're a Sixers fan or a Hawks fan or just a neutral, you're just like, what do you do? What did you do just then? And it just, you could just sort of feel that the game was lost at that point there for Philadelphia. So I think that is an iconic moment. I mean, it's obviously not an iconic shot in the same way that Giannis had those huge dunks and the flexes, but the symbolism of what that moment may mean now to Ben Simmons going forward in Philadelphia is huge, I think, because again, at that point, if he dunks that, again, there's no guarantee they go on to win that game. But if they do win that game, they win the series and they go up against the Bucks in the conference finals there. Instead, it's like, this is a team. And we were down at the Fortress there after three games there, Skeetsy. It was like, man, I called a douchebag sweep on the way there for Philadelphia. And instead, they end up losing a game seven at home, which is just something that doesn't happen all that often. I think only about 17 or 18% of the time. So, that to me is iconic and in its own way, even though it's not in that same sort of fact. I mean, you think about like Patrick Ewing with that missed layup. You know, guys have done those sorts of things, missed shots at times that have sort of gone on to have an effect. I mean, John Starks getting blocked by Hakeem Olajuwon, another sort of missed shot, missed opportunity that could have swung a series if the player makes that shot.
Yeah, the what if moments for sure.
For like, sure, yeah.
What happens if he dunks that? Do they go on? Do they beat the Bucks, the Sixers in a series? Yeah, all that stuff for sure. Is there any other like big dunks we're forgetting? Like I said, the eight noop for sure.
Yeah.
To win a game was pretty damn iconic. It would be on the short list, I think. You know, Trae Young probably. Like the whole moment in Madison Square Garden where he's like shushing the crowd after I guess the floater. Yeah. Kawhi had a massive dunk, if I remember correctly.
On Kleba.
Yeah. That was a double ender, too.
Was that a double ender? Defense to offense.
Yeah.
Anything else? Any honorable mentions, TK, that we're forgetting here?
Clint Capella shooting a jump shot over the glass. Game 4 Eastern Conference Finals. The most iconic play of the playoffs for me. I don't think I've celebrated harder smacking the roof there in the standing room only. Might be a homer pick a little bit, though.
Sure. And Tass, anything else?
Well, Durant's toe on the line shot will be iconic. Yeah, that's up there. That's I think that would join the podium of, you know, Giannis can have 1 and 1A and Ayton and Durant are 2-3, I think. You know, Cam Johnson had that dunk. It was monstrous.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
But, it doesn't compare to those, though.
Okay. Well, one more question before we take a break, and then we got a lot more, so don't you worry. This one's, you know, obviously very subjective. Favorite series? Which was your favorite series, Lili? Was it the finals? Was it something else? Where do you go?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's hard to sort of go past the finals. We just saw it. It was a great crowning moment for Giannis. They came back from 2-0 down and 1-6. But I am going to play a bit of the homer card here as well. I'm going back to the first series, that Hawks-Knicks series, for a few reasons. Again, Trae Young, his first game, hits the game winner. The crowd was back. It felt like basketball was back in Madison Square Garden. It felt awesome. He got that win. And then I was down at the Fortress, back in an arena, watching game 3. I wasn't sure what was going to happen down there, and the Hawks get the win. Trae Young's doing the too small celebration over Emmanuel quickly as he was winning the game there, and then Trae Young goes out and closes that series in his first try. And again, I just thought maybe it was because I was at the game, maybe it was the Hawks, maybe it was the Knicks being involved again, that it just felt like basketball was actually back. This whole season otherwise had felt a little bit like, I don't know, just there's so many games, it was all sort of compacted together. It didn't feel quite the same, and we didn't have fans for most of the season. And then basically as the playoffs came back, almost every arena, I think, was probably at least 75% capacity, and you could just feel it again. It just felt like basketball was back, and you know, when it's close to home like that, you're pulling for the Hawks. I think I picked them in every series, even against the Bucks. You were like, come on, let's do this, because it's great to be cheering on the home team. So there were a lot of great series. I mean, I would also say the Hawks and Sixers was a great series, a 7-game. We only had 3 7-game series in the entire playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, so for the most part, they were either wrapped up in 5 or 6. So I think that the Hawks to do that, again, going into the series, I don't know who picked what. I think I picked the Knicks because they had home court advantage. And it was like, this is going to be a really good season for whoever advances here.
I thought you picked the Hawks in every series.
Well, yeah, okay. So I picked the Knicks in that one, yeah. But, you know, and even when I was talking to Larry Luke down there at game 3, Hawks bro, Larry Luke.
Yeah.
He could feel, you know, the Sixers won that game. He's like, yeah, but we won. We beat the Knicks in the first round. So it was almost like they didn't even care if they got further than that second round series. And they did. So I think it was probably for me because it was a bit more personal engagement and involvement down there at the Fortress. That was probably my favorite series outside of the finals.
Well, you started the whole standing room only tickets vibe of the 2021 postseason. Credit to you. You started it all off. You went down by yourself, did you not?
I did that first game. Yeah, got a great spot there. I was high-fiving a few bros when the Hawks won, and it was just great to be back.
You said we only had 3 Game 7s in this entire postseason. That's right. We had 1 in the first round, Clippers over Mavericks in 7, and then we did have 2 in the semifinals, both in the East. That was the Hawks over the Sixers, and then we had the Bucks-Nets series that went to 7. And then from there on out, in the conference finals, it was always in 6, and of course in the finals as well. Okay, so you're playing the homer card. That's fine. Trey, we'll go to you next with this one. Favorite series from the postseason?
Clippers Mavs, I think, was pretty good. Throwing out, you know, the finals and the series is all the Hawks series that lead. Clippers Mavs, though, that was a crazy one. We got straight up trashed by Matt Austin coming on the happy hour, telling us we were fools for saying this thing was over after 2 games, but it looked like it was, you know. I end up going 7, like you're saying, 1 of 3 that went 7 games. Some incredible performances. By the donk, he had, I think, 3 40-point games, ended up with 35, 8, and 10 for the series. Kawhi had his dunk on Maxi Kleba. also was like 60, 50, 90 for this series against the Mavericks. And it also introduced us to the concept of road court advantage, which seemed like the craziest thing at the time. Tyler was like, yeah, they shot well here. Let's see him shoot in Dallas. And then they couldn't shoot in Dallas. Yeah. Like, that was crazy to me that he actually pulled that one off. That was a great series. It seems like forever ago, but 7 games between 2 teams that actually had history with each other from the bubble season. Pretty cool.
Oh my God. In getting ready for this, I was like, the Jazz played the Grizzlies?
Yeah.
I was like, what? What did they play? Like, trying to remember games? Like, what the hell happened in that series? But, Tess, do you have a favorite that the guys haven't mentioned?
Yeah, it's tough to go away from the 7-game series for sure. The Clippers and the Mavs. And then even the Clippers and the Jazz going into round 2 was a really great series. It felt like the Jazz had that series.
Yep.
Again, up 2-0, and then boom, here come the Clips. But East Coast bias here. And I say East Coast bias, I go away from the West Coast series because there's more people online watching the East Coast games just because of the time. And so there's more energy. There's more of a vibe when you're watching on Twitter with the East Coasters than it is at 10, 11, watching Terrence Mann, you know, come back. There was a great, great Friday night performance to take that series 4-2 for the Clippers and the Jazz. But not a lot of vibe online. I mean, some, but not like an East Coast game. So, you know, the Bucks-Nets 7-game series ended up being ridiculously good, even though it was ugly coming into that, you know, down the stretch in that game 7, just watching Kevin Durant go 1-on-5 and guys not being able to hit shots like down the stretch there in the fourth quarter. But it went to OT where, yeah, the Nets just couldn't score. That's a very memorable one. But I think, yeah, the Hawks-Sixers one to me had the vibes, that East Coast craziness when they came back from 25 points to really, you know, turn the series. It looked like it was over. It was 2-1, and the Sixers are up 25 points, if I do remember correctly. And then, yeah, the Hawks all of a sudden come back. And here we go. The Atlanta Hawks have a possibility of taking this series. So it looked all but dead in the water. And then, it felt like everybody was on board watching that game. So I think, yeah, the Hawks, Sixers, even though some ugly basketball, guys not taking shots, the fact that the Sixers let the Hawks, steal that game, ugly basketball there. Not the best series, but probably the most dramatic series, considering it was played on the East Coast of North America.
Maybe you have East Coast Twitter bias. You're not following enough West Coast people.
It's possible. It's
right?
Possible. Like, but, yeah. But you're on Twitter. There's East Coast. What I'm saying is there's East Coast representation and there's West Coast representation during the early games. Comes at night, Skeets. People are sleeping.
Yeah, people are sleeping. Don't you have to be following those people to see their tweets? Is my point. Like I'm saying.
But there's
we
more
need a breakdown.
Tweets.
Oh, more tweets. So you're just looking. You're just looking at general Twitter tweets, not who you just follow.
How does Twitter work? Anyone know?
Right?
Yeah, it's like an ATM machine. When do the tweets come out if you're on the East Coast?
Hey, somebody confirm this. Was the first game of the 2021 postseason, was it game 1 between the Bucks? Excuse me. The Bucks and the Heat?
Yeah.
It's pretty wild that the first game, which was a overtime Middleton game winner, started this postseason. Because we came back on Monday, right, of that following week, you know, after the weekend, we were like, that was the greatest opening postseason weekend ever. All the games were close. We had some upsets and stuff like that. Just wild that the Bucks, you know, started it with a bang and then, ended it, of course, in the finals with Middleton actually hitting sort of the one that sealed it. Like we talked about in game 6, you know, Giannis was the star, but Middleton hit that little jumper there on the side to really end it. That's wild. Good picks there. A lot of like, what was the worst series? Let's just throw that out there. Was it Jazz Grizzlies? Because we can't remember anything.
I think by the numbers, yes, it was. I know that the Grizzlies won that first game because Donovan Mitchell didn't play. The Grizzlies were coming in hot after beating the Warriors in the play-in game.
Dylan Brooks with the coming out party there.
He was fighting everyone and fouling out left and right. But it actually wasn't that close really in the end. I think every game might have been even a double-digit point victory by the Jazz, if I remember. It was... maybe not quite, but anyway, it felt like after that first game, the Jazz pretty much were in control.
Wizards, Sixers, way worse. It's got to be Sixers,
Wizards. Way worse. Wizards, Sixers, way worse.
Yeah, we barely even really talked about that one.
Bucks Heat was pretty brutal, too.
Yeah. I mean,
game one good, saved it.
Yeah.
But then a 34-point win for the Bucks in game two, 29 game three, and it was a close one in game four. Heat only lost by 17.
Ooh,
like,
God,
they had the layup by Jimmy Butler. That was their one highlight of the postseason. So that was bad, and people in the stream team are suggesting second round Nuggets versus Suns, I believe, right?
Yeah.
And at that point, it was just like, you got Jokic. You're out there like Marcus Howard is shooting a whole bunch of jump shots.
That's a good point.
It just was, it just ended up being a disappointing matchup with all the injuries for Denver.
Yeah, that's fair enough. All right, we got lots more questions here as we do our 2021 NBA playoffs recap, but let's take our first break to hear from our sponsors.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Back with No Dunks here, our 2021 NBA playoffs recap. A few more questions for you guys, everybody in the stream team, everybody listening and watching later. Tweet at us your answers at No Dunks Inc. or leave them in the YouTube comments. This is a good one. TK, we'll go to you first. Who had the best breakout performance of the 2021 postseason?
Two candidates here, and I think it's basically a toss-up. Devin Booker and Trae Young are the breakout performers this postseason for me. Here's the case for Booker. 27 per game, 5 rebounds, 4.5 assists per game. He had 4 40-point games, including that masterpiece against the Clippers. 40 points, 13 rebounds, 11 assists. His first career triple-double, and it came with Chris Paul out of the lineup. That was impressive. Booker obviously took his team to the NBA Finals in his first postseason, and he had back-to-back 40-point games there. He's still got some balance things that seems to figure out in the future, but an incredible first postseason for Devin Booker. The Trae Young case, 29 points per game, 3 rebounds, 9.5 assists. He only went for 40 once, but it was in that huge game one against the Bucks. 48 points, 11 assists in a win. Not his only huge game one. Got the playoffs started with 32-10 against the Knicks in Madison Square Garden. Hit the game winner. That's the shush game. He also added the bow game. Ended up spraining his ankle against the Bucks, but a great first playoff run for Trae Young as well. So who's the breakout star? I'm going Trae Young, homer. Somewhat less established than Devin Booker. The Suns did have the bubble run last year, even if it wasn't technically the playoffs. But I'm also giving Trae Young some bonus points for maybe becoming the biggest villain in the NBA, but like a likable villain. Like the guy that everybody's happy to be rooting against or cheering against or cheering for when it's going up against the team you're not particularly a fan of. So Trae Young kind of reestablished himself in the NBA, especially considering like he didn't make the All-Star team this year. That's crazy to think of, despite having a great season, starting the game last season, to not make it when it was in Atlanta this year. Pretty crazy. And then he obviously was incredible come playoff time. Trae Young, breakout star for me, but I'll take your arguments for Booker for sure.
Yeah, fair enough. I saw Ziller writing about those two guys, and I thought he had an interesting question off of their breakout performances, like being young guys that people questioned and said, oh, they just get stats on bad teams and all that bullshit. Who would you like to see sort of like step into that role next? And Ziller threw out like a Karl-Anthony Towns, which was like, I was like, oh, that's a good one. Is there anyone else, like a young guy, Lili, that hasn't maybe, you know, had a lot of chances in the playoffs yet, or maybe he's even never been there, that sort of gets like killed a little bit on social media or some of the talking heads saying, ah, whatever, these stats are pointless. Let's see him do it in a postseason. Anybody else that comes to mind? I think Kat is a good one.
Yeah. Wow. On the spot here. That's the thing, like you forget so quickly. Like we forget the playoffs, so it's so hard to remember even the regular season, like who performed well but didn't get a chance really,
right,
to do that. So I'm definitely scrambling, tap dancing here a little bit, but let me just have a look here. Okay, I've got one. I'm gonna go back to my safety net of the Charlotte Hornets, of that team. You know, they played some really good basketball during the regular season this year, and LaMelo Ball was a fantastic rookie. They made the play-in tournament. You know, they weren't fantastic in the play-in tournament there, but you know, that would be, I would like to see now what happens with the Hornets going forward. Was this season one of those ones where it's like nobody was really expecting them to be as good as they were? I mean, they were up to fourth there before LaMelo went down. So they come into next season with expectations. And if they make the playoffs, can LaMelo Ball actually step it up? Because the shot wasn't too bad in terms of its effectiveness. It's not the prettiest in the world, but he was more than that as well. He was a good defender. He was a fantastic sort of playmaker there for the Hornets. So there is now, you know, you go from like, oh, this is cool, this guy's been great, you know, he's lived up to the hype, to now it's like, okay, your team now, anything short of making the playoffs next season, assuming again health, will be a bit of a letdown, I think, for the Hornets. They're going to expect now to see some growth. They've got some good young players there, Malik Monk and PJ Washington, Miles Bridges. Malik Monk, I'm trying to just say guys right now, but...
No, you don't need to. You can stop.
Double monk strap over here.
It's fine. I think LaMelo, despite being a rookie, really.
Yeah, but that's fine. That's fine, because he's not really a rookie in that sense. I mean, he's an older rookie, and he was the back-to-back rookie of the year, of course, coming from Australia. So, you know, I would like to see the Hornets in the playoffs and see if LaMelo, you know, if he can live up to it like Trae Young, because I didn't think Trae Young was going to have that sort of a convincing first ever playoff appearance.
Sure, and, sure.
You know, it's rare. I think that is rare. I mean, off the top of my head, I can't sort of think of another guy who's just sort of burst into the playoffs and really carried his team that far in his first go. You know, Devin Booker, of course, having Chris Paul there, I think that really helped him. And he's obviously a little bit more experienced too. So, yeah, LaMelo, give me LaMelo.
Okay. I think along the same lines as a Carl Anthony Towns, like a deer and fox.
Right.
A guy that people are like, wow, he's really good. Numbers are there. You know, you'd like to see him, of course, get his team into the postseason and see if he can continue to do it. But back to best breakout performance. Again, TK hitting was with the two obvious ones. I think that's fair, the Booker, Trae Young. Is there anyone else, Tass, that you would add to this list?
Yeah, I think usually this is a little bit harder of a selection. Usually you don't see guys come into their first postseason and just dance and shush and bow like Trae Young or Devin Booker getting to his first finals, you know, Booker to his first finals, Trae to his first conference finals. That's impressive. So Trae was able to put on a show, like the most performative Trae Young, I think, wins it, just because I think he's got a lot of memorable things that happened with the bow in front of MSG and the shushing and the criticizing of his shushing, that his finger got up way too far up his nose, and the losers on social media questioning his ability to shush, where to put his finger. That was Broadway. What he did there, that was to, and then be able to back it up in the second round. The Hawks were a better team than the Knicks, and then he goes out and beats the Sixers. So I think, as far as a memory goes, as far as just shutting up the haters, that there are a lot more people, I think, on the bandwagon that Trae Young is a stats guy versus Devin Booker. Maybe a little East Coast bias. You know, a lot of people just hating on Trae, commenting on his hair, which looked great, by the way. But those two, just to come out and do that in your first playoffs, it just doesn't happen. Booker, most points ever for a first appearance in the playoffs. And then I think down the sort of the rungs, DeAndre Ayton made a name for himself, 16 and 12.
Mm-hmm. Huge.
66% from the field. That's 16 and 12. Hello. Those are the numbers you're going to remember. We mentioned John Morant, only played five games, but he had a 47 spot.
Yep.
Nice. So people will, you know, probably forget that. But if the Grizzlies have to have a little bit more success. And then I think a couple bucks. You know, Chris Middleton got a little MVP love when we talked earlier about the finals MVP and how he was the closer for the guy that eventually, you know, won the finals MVP. Chris Middleton is the guy that you can go to down the stretch, shot 75% in clutch situations, you know, plus or minus five with 5 minutes left. So not the team's best player, but their closer. So that's pretty unique. I think he made his name known. And the same with Drew Holiday. If you cared about the defense on the national stage, you know, a lot of people didn't know who Drew Holiday was, but to get him in the finals, to see what he did, like, physically, and to have all those cameras and see the replays of him just bodying guys, double hand rips, you know, the backhand rip of Booker, like, that is amazing. I mean, yeah. It's like you're sweeping stuff off the table. The way, like, he just has all these angles. So a bunch of guys, even though, you know, Drew obviously had been there before, Middleton had been there before. Those were names that, you know, a lot of people didn't know because, yeah, they just, you know, kind of fly under the radar. But obviously the second and third best player in the key to the Bucks winning the whole thing.
Lee, anyone else to add? Again, maybe not of the superstar level, but like, you know, a fourth, fifth, sixth type of guy?
No, Ayton was my pick because he increased his production from the regular season to the playoffs. Now, look, the playoffs probably were a game or two too long for him in the end. You know, he ran out of steam a little bit there, but certainly had some incredible moments. Obviously, the alley-oop dunk to win game two against the Clippers, I think, was probably, you know, his standout moment in terms of a highlight there, but really did deliver. He was overall fantastic for Phoenix. He seemed to sort of just, you know, Giannis kind of figured out that he couldn't really stop him, and he got defensively caught a few times there against Giannis and the Bucks. So, you know, other than that, though, I think he was very important to their run, you know, fantastic in those first two series. The future is pretty bright, but for any time a guy first time in the playoffs can increase his scoring and rebounding from his regular season numbers, I think is a pretty good sign for what you're going to get in the future.
Right. Yeah. Who else made themselves maybe like some money this year? We talked about John Collins maybe
nice
helping
one.
his bank account, at least in terms of like the way he just started to like, hey, I can just do all the dirty work here and help my team win games and people are going to love me for it. So he was good. Is there anyone else that I'm forgetting?
A couple other. What about this guys? I don't know if you consider him a breakout star, but he's definitely made some money. Reggie Jackson, Reggie Jackson. What did he end up? He ended up at almost 18 a game, 3.5 assists, 3.5 rebounds, shot 48 from the floor and 40% from three, almost 41. It seemed like Reggie Jackson has to stop making shots at some point. He's not going to make every pull-up off the dribble from three, is he? But he basically did for the Clippers, and they needed it, especially once Kawhi went down. Terrence Mann also had a monster game that really put him on the map. Could have probably played more against the Suns, if we're being honest. And Lee, I can't believe with all the homer picks you've been making,
yes,
you didn't bring up Kevin Huerta.
Yes, Kevin.
Game Huerta. 7, Kevin.
Yeah, he was. He was. He did go missing a couple of games though, also in that series. But he was good. And I mean, you know, for the Hawks when they lost DeAndre Hunter and then Cam Reddish did come back and he actually played well in his game. What was that? 6 against the Bucks. He started to play well at both ends of the floor. So. That's a good sign also for the Hawks that, you know, Hunter was good in the first round. That was all he played. And then when Cam Reddish did play, he looked quite good. So that young core there, you know, starting with Trey and then John Collins. And then, you know, there's going to be some questions to make there for Travis Schlenk and the Atlanta Hawks because they, you know, obviously they can't pay everybody and not everyone's going to get super max money. But John Collins is the biggest one now because they couldn't agree about a year ago on a contract. And now he's still a restricted free agent. So the Hawks can match any offer he gets. Wouldn't be surprised to see, though, John Collins does get some pretty healthy offers out there because he hit some huge shots, played some huge defense as well, and showed that he doesn't have to be the sort of guy who needs the ball in his hand to be effective. I thought he had some really key moments throughout the playoffs after starting off terribly against the Knicks, too. Remember, he got in a lot of foul trouble, couldn't stay on the court, but against Philadelphia, he was huge in a couple of those wins.
Yeah, we got to throw in a Bobby Portis here. For sure, with what he did for specifically in the finals. It was good postseason for all the Cams, I'd say. You said Cam Reddish. You know, Cam Johnson had moments for the Suns. Cam Payne had incredible games at times for Phoenix. And how about a breakout performance for Coach Bud? Budenholzer.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm like being somewhat serious here. Like,
yeah,
switching things up, leaning into playing his guys a lot of minutes. Like, those guys ended up playing huge minutes, his stars in Giannis and Chris Middleton and Drew. And, you know, that was always one thing he was getting raked for and killed for. It was like, come on, man, you got to play your guys more. Like, what are you doing? And he did. So good for him. It's easy. I think it was, I forget what podcast I was listening to, but they were like, this guy just went from, like, he was going to be fired every round, of course. Like, he's out of here. He's done. He can't do it. To now, he's got a title. So he's basically, like, going to be Rick Carlisle 2.0 here, where it's like one title at the right time.
Yep.
Well, you're set. I mean, he'll probably be the coach for the next, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, maybe longer, because you can hang on that one. Was that your bud face?
Five more years of bud face, man. That's exciting. Very, very exciting.
And no bud face in the post-game celebration, just all smiles from Coach Bud. Just, you know, thanking Giannis and Chris Middleton for allowing him to be part of the ride. I was just watching, but just a huge smile. Just so happy.
I don't have it, unfortunately, but there is a good Bud with the LOB photo that they, of course, everybody takes a turn taking the photos. There's a pretty good Bud smiling face. Like, it's just like his face is really pushed back. We'll get it for the next show, but it was a good pick.
I think it was Stephen LeBron on Twitter that he just put up the photo of Bud with the trophy and said, "Who photoshopped this?"
It was great.
Tim Hardaway. But honestly, hey, listen, after that game two against the Nets, and you know, Bud couldn't have been closer to being fired because they nearly lose game three there as well. But they pull it out. They were down by three with a minute to go, and they came back and win it. And so I'm happy for Bud because I was ready to just like get rid of him. I was like, Bud, no, you're done. But he stuck true. He kept the team together. He kept that locker room together because you lose by 40. Well, they didn't lose by 49. They were down by 49. But you lose that badly, that humiliating, embarrassing way in a playoff game, that often is a sign of the player saying, screw this guy, we're done with him. Mm-hmm. But they didn't do that. Instead, they fought back and they hung on. They got a bit lucky, but that's fine. It happens to every champion. You've got to take a few bounces that go your way throughout the playoffs. And they did stick by Bud. They always had his back. So I think that's the reason, a big reason why they're still here today is that, or they're champs now, that they didn't sort of turn on each other in that locker room. They held firm, and Bud deserves a lot of credit for that.
There's an article on The Athletic today, actually, about how close the Bucks were to firing Bud mid-series after that game, too.
Really?
Seriously?
Just kidding. I just made that up. It's not on The Athletic.
I haven't read that one yet, but wow. It's pretty wild that we thought that was maybe real, though, because that's how dicey it looked.
No, that would never happen. No coach will be fired mid-series. I think you can go
I'll
on the record.
I'll take that bet.
Unless something off court happens.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I would take that bet.
Tim Hardaway earned himself some money, though.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago. But
his season, though,
17 points. He's coming into the offseason where he is a free agent. 17 points per game. Ridiculous percentages in the playoffs. Playing aside Luka. They got to re-sign him, right? Feels that way.
All right, a couple more questions. We've been too positive here on this show. Who had the most disappointing postseason in the 2021 run here? Lee, who was it for you?
Jimmy Butler. Honestly, Jimmy Butler, after what happened in the bubble last season, he was great. He really did drag that team to a couple of victories, especially in the finals against the Lakers when they were down Dragic and Bam, and he was great. And he came in this season saying he was stupidly locked in. And after game one, it looked like, okay, that was a sort of classic Jimmy sort of game. Even though they lost it, he grinded his team. He carried them to the point where it was like they were going to steal that series and home, or that game and home court advantage. So, but he shot 4 for 22 in that game. And after that, he was just bad. He had 10 points in game two, 19 in game three, and then 12 in game four, where they got absolutely, I mean, they lost games 2 by 34, game 3 by 29, and then the closeout game by 17 at home.
Yep.
And Jimmy deserves to take a lot of the hits for this because, you know, I mean, he's the guy you expect to step up, and he didn't do it. He shot badly, and I will never, ever be able to come to terms with the fact that Bryn Forbes outscored him in that series. Bryn Forbes. I think Bryn Forbes scored 60 in that series. he may not have scored 60 for the rest of the playoffs. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, sort of doubt it.
He probably would have come close to it. But not, you know, again, it's not obviously all about shooting. You know, with Jimmy, it's more. And he finished with a triple double in game four. Well, you lose by 17. That doesn't count. That's not playing well. He just wasn't able to impact the games like he was, and he just didn't seem to have the juice that he had down there in Orlando. So
he didn't have the coffee. That's why.
No, that's right. So Jimmy deserves
the juice
to take,
and the coffee.
You know, for all the praise that he earned last season, and he deserved that. You know, for what he'd done with the Heat, he was bad. He was just bad in that first round series outside of game one.
It's a
just
really
like
good,
a honeydew
really
melon, he was bad. but that was
you don't like honeydew.
It's fine. You know, yeah. People like to trash the cantaloupe and the honeydew melon as filler melons.
Right.
Garbage fruit in a fruit salad. You gotta have them in there. They're nice. It's a nice mild flavor. It lets everything else really, really shine. But that was Bud's first adjustment, man. We should have known early on that the Bucks were a different team. All during the bubble, the question was, why is Giannis not guarding Jimmy Butler at all? And he's like, I don't know. Coach doesn't want me to. So he didn't.
Yeah.
Coach wanted him to guard Jimmy Butler from the jump, and you could tell. It just took Jimmy completely out of his game. Like, we've talked so many times that Jimmy just wants to get to the hole, shoot free throws, and shoot layups. He was a mid-range jump shooter against the Bucks because he couldn't figure out, except for that take at the end of regulation in game one, couldn't figure out how to consistently beat Giannis off the dribble. Couldn't obviously use his strength to knock Giannis off the spot, which he can do with smaller guards or a wing that's his same size. So that was a right away change from Bud that made the team look different. Giannis, like you said earlier, Tass, did not have a great offensive series against the Heat, but he completely took Jimmy Butler out of the series, and that's why the Bucks were able to sweep that one.
It's a great call. I like that one. Who else do you have as a disappointing player, Tass?
Well, Ben Simmons, as far as reputations go, Ben Simmons took the biggest hit, I think, of everybody. Jimmy Butler kind of, you know, he skated by. He still got the reputation. Jim is still Jim. But Ben Simmons is, the reputation of him not being able to do anything on the offensive end, which I'm sure is rectifying right now and will have a comeback season. But CJ McCollum is also a little disappointing as Damian Lillard's right-hand man that they went out in six against the Nuggets. Although CJ McCollum's numbers are okay when it comes down to it.
Yeah,
he scored 20 per game. The percentages definitely could have been a lot better. But I think just in general, I loved the playoffs. I think they were phenomenal. But, you know, there were some disappointments. I got to admit, as much as I want to be an NBA man, league-wide, injuries were a disappointment. Kawhi not being able to finish the playoffs, the Nets stars going down. Jamal Murray took away from Nikola Jokic's MVP season and his ability to get out of the second round. So I think there were, the way things ended in some parts, in some franchises, definitely some disappointments.
Anthony Davis, for sure, too. Injuries and having a disappointing, very limited postseason for him. He didn't play all that well. Julius Randle, I'll throw into the bunch here. I mean, he was an all-NBA player. He was incredible this year, and he was horrible. He was
Pumpkin horrible man.
In the postseason. He shot under 30%. Against the Hawks. So, that was brutal. I know he sort of started to get it going later in the series, but it was bad. Again, for a guy that had an unbelievable year. Anyone else, TK, disappointing?
Kristaps Porzingis did not have a good playoffs. 13 per game. He shot 47 from the field. That looks okay, except for he's taken a ton of threes and he shot less than 30% from there. Has Dallas majorly questioning if he's going to be the solution next to Luka, because as everybody has said, the fit looks great. You know, if Porzingis gives you Porzingis at his peak, you're loving what you're seeing. But he looks completely outclassed defensively in particular. Can't really move side to side, it feels like, which kind of limits his effectiveness out there. And if he's just going to be a 7'3" three-point shooter, that's not what the Mavs were signing up for that trade. Like everybody said, Tim Hardaway made himself some money, and it seems to be the Tim Hardaway trade at this point.
Yep. Final one here for everybody joining us live here again, and for you guys. You can go anywhere you want with this one, but what was your favorite random moment? Either, again, on the court, on social media, in a post-game press conference, whatever. What was just your favorite random moment, Tass?
I'm going to have to go with Nosegate for the Atlanta Hawks in general. Not only Trae Young was questioned about his ability to put his finger over his lips, the fact that his finger rose too high, you know, coming close to the brow, got people questioning. Does he know how to shush? But then his teammate, Bogdan Bogdanovic, also missed his nose. So I've got a split screen here that I'm showing you. Bogdan Bogdanovic went...
It does look crazy.
He went way too far, and he just missed. You know, he was backpedaling, I think, at the time, so give him a little bit of slack there. But Trey, you know, a lot, definitely taking flack from all sides, very high. I mean, maybe he's got super long fingers. Maybe he's shushing while simultaneously hitting the brow, but he's doing it all. So I think, the ridicule that Hawks took was something I'll probably remember. I mean, Trey was amazing in his performative skills. It wasn't just that he, you know, smoked the Knicks in MSG, but he shushed. He bowed. So those are the things I'll remember, but I'm going to remember this Hawks team for their inability to put their finger on their lips.
That was a big postseason for noses when you throw in Devin Booker busting his up there, too, and then all that was going on with the Hawks.
And the campaign, Nikola Jokic. Remember, he swatted at him. Jokic got ejected. Is the nose part of the face? Yeah, it is.
Oh, a lot of nose talk. Suns in four guy beating up the other guy, punching him in the nose, I'm sure, a little bit.
That's my random moment. Yeah. Suns fans in general are my random moment. There's almost a Mount Rushmore for me. It's a Mount Rushmore plus one. Suns in four guy obviously is making the list, knocking out the Denver Nuggets fan and then having the wherewithal to turn to the camera and guarantee a sweep that came true. Incredible. The money man is also making my Suns fan Mount Rushmore. Yep. Lee, I've been thinking about this. The only shirt he's going to have from this is the Western Conference champion shirt now.
Yeah.
And he's got to wear it because that's what he was wearing when he was the money man. You've also got the upside down counting guy. I think this was from game two when they were still counting down Giannis, right? And he had like a purple bandana tied around. He's like, woo, 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 that kind of stuff. And then my fourth and fifth spot, I'm calling them the modern day Beavis and Butthead.
Okay.
It was the long blonde-haired kid and his friend with the a little bit shorter brown hair that would just like make faces to the camera anytime they were showed, and they were shown all the time in games one and two. Suns fans, you know, they didn't have the playoffs for 10 years and it showed. They went completely buck wild when they finally got the chance. I love it.
Yeah. Were those the same guys that were like headbanging at one point? crazy, going nuts? They brought
those
it.
Guys.
Especially with this addition of whatever we're calling this camera. You know, heaven forbid you call it an 8K camera. Everybody gets upset. But you know the camera I'm talking about, where we're you're only in focus there in the front. And we got a lot of that this postseason. That was sort of a new wrinkle. Yeah. And they used it more times on the fans than they used it on the players, I think. So that's a good one. Lee, what do you have here for a favorite random moment?
I just want to say Suns in four guy. I mean, he's become a celebrity through that now. Like, he's got tons of followers everywhere all over the place. But I wonder what happens to him now. Does he continue, or is it kind of like, that's it, you're done now? But yeah, like the way that he just like
getting in a celebrity boxing match.
Yeah. But the way he was in Denver. You know, he was in Denver, and the guy sort of came at him, jumped him, took a cheap shot, and instead he pummels him, has a swing at his other bloke, at his friend. Then they both run off because they got the hell punched out of him. He just turns around wearing a Steve Nash throwback, arms in the air in Denver. Like, he was just king of the world there for a while. So it's hard to go past him, but I will
and
go.
And he flew into the conference finals, didn't he? And Booker hooked him up with tickets and a jersey.
And he gave him a ticket, and he's got a photo with Jamal Murray as well there. He's got a photo with him. So, he was living in the moment.
Great postseason for him.
The other moment that I enjoyed, because I was kind of like really entertained by it but also really scared of it, was when Kevin Durant's mum, Wanda, had a go at PJ Tucker. I remember because she'd been getting into it. And she's like, PJ, this is basketball, not football. And then she, you know, she pulled down the mask of that. And PJ says, I love you. And she says, I love you too. But it was kind of like, I know Kevin Durant's bouncer came out there or a security guard in the fight. I'd be more scared of Wanda if she came out to the floor there with a shoe in her hand, you know, ready to just like, you leave my son alone. But that was great because we hadn't seen Wanda for a while. It feels like we hadn't seen her since the Thunder days. So it was good to have her back there, but it was a good little moment, just the death stare that she gave to PJ Tucker there. I mean, what's PJ, 6'6", 6'7"? Wanda's probably, what, 5'10", but it looked like she was out there ready to throw down.
You if
she
think
had to
Wanda's 5'10"?
Wow. I don't know. I mean, well, Kevin's 7 foot, so I'm assuming she's kind of, you know, taller than an average woman. I'm
taller than an average mom.
I'm surprised there weren't in the stare down. I'm surprised there weren't a lot more WandaVision memes. I didn't see like any.
Great point. Stream team coming through with some great favorite random moments. We had the John Collins dunk, which got turned into the T-shirt.
Oh yeah,
That was pretty good. A lot of people saying, you know, okay, Suns and four guy, he had his moment. But what about Brandon Jennings literally showing up at the finals? His Bucks and six prediction coming true. He is the one. It's the prophecy was told. What else? People are talking about some of the fights that we
there
had.
We go, let me click on this one. How about Steve Ballmer?
Oh yeah.
Oh my
this
god.
We had a lot of fun with this.
Oh my.
Slap the thighs.
God, it's actually more awkward than I even remembered.
Yeah, I know.
The leg rub.
Was it Pablo Torre who said he's committing multiple HR violations?
Yeah. That was good. A couple Bobby Portis moments, people are saying. I even like when he was high-stepping in game six there.
That was
like,
good.
Like Deion Sanders down the sidelines, taking it to the house. So, yeah, lots more. Let us know again if you're listening. Tweet at us at NoDunksInc and drop them in the YouTube comments. All right. Let's call it there in terms of the questions. That was a lot of fun. Hope you guys enjoyed that. But we still have Tweet of the Night, so don't go anywhere.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Okay, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
All right, Tassie, what do you got?
Tweet of the Night comes from friend of the program, Graydon Gordian. Dropped a tweet after the finals were all done. And the tweet is, quote, Drake working Adetokounmpo into a line is going to be tricky, but he'll figure out something. And that tweet went viral. It went so viral, we're up to 140,000 likes. What I'm disappointed is, I don't think Graydon gained a lot of followers out of that.
Oh,
what's the point of going viral if you're not going to gain a lot of followers? I would guess about 50 if I've looked a couple times at the profile, but that's all I'm seeing. Anyway, I mean, it got so viral that every social media outlet was posting it. You know, your standard Giannis photo with the tweet overlay.
Yep.
Jay Skeets was shared it in WhatsApp chats all over the place. Look at this viral twit.
Believe it.
Yeah, it got everywhere.
I mean, Graydon Gordian's a funny guy. He's a great Twitter follow. He tweets a lot of funny things. This was like not even close to his best work, but it just shows you never know what's going to go viral. It's like, I don't know if it's timing is everything. It just got put in front of the right person who then retweeted it and amplified it. Like I said to him, I was like, it's always the ones you least expect. Hey, he's like, yeah, even he was like, yeah, I just just threw it up there, but maybe Drake retweeted it. I don't know, but I'm disappointed to hear he didn't gain a lot of followers. He has a nice SoundCloud. Yeah. He probably could have pitched. Check out my tunes, stuff like that.
He doesn't really have a SoundCloud, does he?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I got you back. I got you back for that athletic.
He loves wine. I mean, he's not a champagne poppy, but he is a wine poppy for a day here.
Oh, wow. He should, under that tweet, he should be sharing his wine, what do you call it? Distribution, I guess?
Yeah, he's selling Wayne Gretzky's wines here in America.
No, he doesn't have Wayne Gretzky wines.
I was just wondering, Tassie, with the follower thing, has he tweeted since then? I haven't seen his...
Yeah.
Because I'm just wondering what those sort of, you know, after your big tweet like that, you know, do people sort of go to your profile and then see what you're tweeting after and go, oh, actually, I think he just got lucky on that tweet. I mean... You know, or is he just a regular?
He got
funny?
Lucky on that tweet.
I'm just saying.
If he had more followers, people are more likely to follow him. If he had,
I think that as well. But then people also go, "Man, that's an awesome tweet. Is this guy super funny all the time, or is it just like, you know, he did the George Costanza? He's like, that's it, I'm out, and you know, like he didn't want to, he couldn't follow it up, is what I'm saying. Because people want those follow up tweets. You know, they want to know if you were, you know, if they just weren't aware of who you were. I'm just saying that's
well, sure.
I think people just move on. I think it's done. If you go to Graydon Gordon's profile, the tweet that he's pinned, bloody hilarious. It's a conversation between him and his girlfriend, Taryn, or his
girlfriend.
Wife, Taryn. I mean, at the time, it was his girlfriend. So, quote, get off your phone, my girlfriend. This is the best day on Twitter ever. Let me enjoy it. Listen to what you said. Are you proud? Yes. It's a good tweet. I'd follow that.
Okay. I love that tweet because we know him and Taryn, but yeah.
Isn't that, I think that's from the DeAndre Jordan getting locked in his house agency day.
It's 2015, though.
Oh, my goodness.
I guess that was it. Yeah.
Yeah.
July 8th.
I think it is that, if I remember correctly.
True love is remembering your friend's pinned tweets.
Yeah, wow.
You know what? He should have followed it up with a line. You're broke like Vin Baker. I'm sorry that sucks. Call me Antetokounmpo when I carry the Bucks.
Yeah, right.
It's not going to be hard. Drake's got a lot of writers. They're going to be able to come up with something.
It's not going to be very hard. No.
Yeah.
No. That's why I was like, wow, this tweet. Why this tweet? It's not, again, this is not a knock on Graydon. It's just not that great a tweet. It's not that witty. It's not that funny. It's just amazing. It's like just you don't know which one's gonna take off. It usually is the one that you least expect, Trey. Seriously, it's like sometimes you're like, oh, this is gonna be a banger of a tweet. Watch this. And you're like, ugh, barely nothing. And then you're like, I'll throw up this thing. And there it goes, man.
So you're saying my approach is all wrong because I think every tweet is going viral.
Yeah.
And I've never put up Gordian numbers.
No, I think you're right. Yeah, you know, you just got to start. Yeah, you're overthinking Gordian it, numbers. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Gordian
numbers.
He's
got a big
numbers.
Venn diagram. There's a lot of Drake fans out there. There are a lot of Giannis fans out there.
Yep. Timing, of
the
course.
The timing was perfect.
Yep.
You know what? I know Graydon is an ad man, so I think we might need to hire him. I'm going to hire him to ghostwrite my tweets.
Wow.
For 1 week to see if he can do it again.
Can he replicate the viral, the 100,000 plus like tweet by writing for Trey Kirby? I love this idea.
All right. I'll let him send me one tweet a day for a week and I will post it. You won't know which one it is. Hopefully he's listening to him, to the podcast, because I actually do have a piece of mail for Graydon sitting right here.
Oh, nice.
So I'll give him this piece of mail if he writes me a viral tweet.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'm keeping it.
Okay.
There's no chance he can replicate it. And not because it's Graydon or because of writing. You just never know what goes viral, as you said.
You never know.
That,
well, but
just
hold on. He's going to have some stuff to work with. You got the Olympics starting. Okay, that's good. He's big F1 guy. We got any races this weekend?
Well, what are we
doing? Taking a break.
I don't know.
Okay, maybe something there. I don't know. Are we in awards season? Probably not. I'm just trying to think of other things that he can... maybe this giant horse. Okay, there's 8-foot horse. There's something there. Go to work, Graydon.
Okay. Okay. Okay,
that's going to be a lot of glue. There you go. Tweet it.
I already got a horse tweet off this morning. I can't follow it up.
Come on. That's what you got to do, man. Don't worry about it.
I'm going back in.
All right.
So you're the main Trey.
Stop going in.
Yeah,
and get to back Lee's point as far as follow-up tweets. He did have a decent one. His tweet was... Of course, Giannis decorates his kitchen like some sort of suburban mom with Instagram snapshots of the Bon Appetit thing over his kitchen table.
Over the window there,
So
Hey, zoom in. Well done. Good stuff. Okay. We should probably call it there. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. Shout out once again to the stream team. Really appreciate it. No show tomorrow. We are going to take a little bit of a break here. We'll be back on Monday, though, with our film session for Space Jam, A New Legacy. So if you haven't watched it yet, I guess I have to encourage you to go watch it to then hear us talk about it. Otherwise, you're going to get a bunch of spoilers. You're really going to want to check out this podcast. Lee has some fascinating takes on the production behind Space Jam, A New Legacy. So that's dropping on Monday. What are you worried about what you said?
No, I'm not worried. No, I think
you're just like, oh, that movie. Still, you can't shake it.
Yeah. It was just like, man, it was, well, yeah. Tune in if you want.
Tune in if you want. Monday. That's
how you plug it, baby.
Well, I mean, yeah. Anyway.
It's all right. You know, it's going to be up on Monday, and we'll either really anger you with our Space Jam takes or maybe you'll agree. So that goes up on Monday. For the rest of the week, we're looking at some draft coverage. You're going to get some experts in there. So we'll be talking about that because that's happening next Thursday. I mean, here we go. We are right into it. We got a couple other things up our sleeve as well in terms of podcasts. And as I said, Beach Step In, I'm sure we'll do one of those. So get your questions in. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com. JD, Tass, you guys are off for about a week, let's say. A well-deserved vacation, especially you, JD. Tass, you as well. But JD, the machine. The one-man classic factory. So enjoy your time off. Hopefully we won't break anything, and hopefully we won't have to, specifically JD, be trying to get a hold of you and like, what have we done? How do we fix this? Oh, how do we do this?
I will be unreachable as of Sunday afternoon, so don't even try.
Oh, my God. So you're saying, like, it's very possible we have no shows next week if everything goes to hell.
Well, I'm leaving you in good hands. We got Andrew Schlecht on the case, so... He's an expert athletic producer, so
okay.
And he actually knows about basketball, so you know it'll be fine.
Oh, it might actually work out perfectly. Tass will be gone for a good chunk of these shows, so we can get Andrew's take on some of the things. I bet you Andrew knows more about the draft than we do. So
he better. He's a Thunder fan. He's going to be living at it for the next few years.
Nice call.
Tweet and you will hear JD on the Space Jam pod, so not to worry about
Yeah, that's true. We've already recorded that one. That one's in the can, so that we'll post that on Monday, and then for the rest of the week, we'll have Andrew filling in for JD behind the scenes. And anyway, guys, have a fun break. Enjoy yourself at the cottage. Tass, you're going to an island, little resort, so... Oh, come on. Are you going to be offline or are you going to be on your phone? Are we going to see some fun photos, whatever you're up to?
I hope not.
Oh, okay.
Because that means I'm not enjoying myself.
Good point.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you get to a resort by day three, you're back on your phone. You're like, all right. Now I just want to see what's going on because you're sitting by the pool. You're sitting by the beach. I'm sure the Wi-Fi is strong. You're good.
Yeah. I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about Space Jam. I'll be tuning in.
All right. Guys, we will see you next week. Again, no show tomorrow. We'll see you next week. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, actually, I got a question for you guys. Which fruit believes in traditional marriage?
Cantaloupe.
Oh, wow, he called it.
Do the honeydew.
Embrace the weekend, people. You could stay.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.